Okay, so this is class four of our Eightfold Path structured study. And this class is on the topic of this class is right action and right livelihood. And so in presenting that, I'm going to talk about the Lakhana Sutta, which is a very short sutta. So I'll just read all the way through it now. The Buddha's words. Sangha. There are fools and there are those imbued with wisdom. It is apparent through actions that one's understanding, oh wait, sorry. It is through actions that one's understanding is apparent. A person who acts with bodily misconduct or verbal misconduct or mental misconduct is acting foolishly. A person who acts with skillful bodily actions or skillful verbal actions or skillful mental actions is acting with wisdom. Train yourselves in this manner. Be mindful to abandon foolishness in thought, word, and deed. Develop and maintain mindful wisdom in thought, word, and deed. That's the end of the sutta.
Wow.
So, usually when I'm going to teach, I kind of read through the sutta, and then, I will sort of let it percolate for a couple days, and then I go back to it, and maybe I make some notes, and then, and I probably spend, I try not to spend more than like an hour preparing, because when I first started my first the first sutta that I ever presented, I spent like 20 hours on it, right? I think the teacher was just like, you could just keep going and going and going. So I kind of cre set that sort of limit on myself. And this one I kept going back to, I think partially because I was distracted when I was going back to it. I just had a busy week. But also, because I kept trying to explain what right action and right mindfulness is. I wanted to point to it. I wanted to provide a list, a bulleted list to explain. Here it is. This is what you have to do. Here, this is the right action. This is wrong action. And every time I did that, I realized it, there was exceptions to every right action or every wrong action. And I also realized that what I consider to be a right action, even within as a Dhamma practitioner, you might consider to be a wrong action as a Dhamma practitioner. And so I looked at other suttas, trying to see if there was any bulleted lists of right action and wrong action. There was some stuff that John had in his book. And what I just kept coming back to was that if you're practicing the Dhamma, you will know what right action is. I can't spoon feed that to you. I can't tell you what your right action is. I can only say this is what right action is. So then I just stopped. I have a ton of notes. I'm not going to read any of them. I went back to it the last time and I just was like, this to me is what right action is. Well, first of all, like what I said, you'll know right action and right livelihood when you see it, when you're engaged in the Dhamma, when you're practicing the Dhamma. And likewise, you will know wrong action and livelihood when you see it and when you get and engage in it if you're practicing the Dhamma. And how will you know? Wrong action and livelihood leads to or intensifies craving and clinging. Or it causes like more ego to arise, or more deluded thinking or confused thinking. And right livelihood and right action leads to or intensifies unbinding or release or scattering, or it leads to less deluded or less confused thinking or less ego or anatta. So that's all I have. I mean, I have a lot of other stuff, but I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to ask you guys what your definition of right action or right livelihood is, if you feel like you want to share that. I don't know if I should start online. Yeah, let's start online. How about teacher Kevin? Haven't seen you. How's it going, man? Good to see you.
Good, Jen. Thanks for delivering this sutta. Kind of in your position with what I have to do on Tuesday, but no, I think you did a good job. I don't know if this one necessarily needs to be over-explained. I mean, we've been talking about the context of right view and seeing things clearly through the Dhamma, through the lens of Four Noble Truths, and that will inform our actions out in the world. I think we've taught suttas before about if it's harmful to ourselves or others, and you know, we talked last week that we're doing harm if we're not practicing right speech, if we're, you know, people pleasing or afraid to maybe be more honest in our speech with regards to our newfound understanding here and with Four Noble Truths. So yeah, I think that it kind of builds on last week. You know, right action is maybe knowing when to apply right speech and building on that. Sometimes it's better to practice noble silence. Sometimes it's better to establish your boundary, say the word no once in a while. It's okay. We know that now. Doesn't harm yourself or others if you're speaking your truth. So thanks so much, Jen. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin. So saying outright, you know, I think we tend to think in terms of like things being one way or another way, or trying to put things in categories or buckets. Again, you know, harmful action is something that is, you have to consider the entire scenario. It might be a little bit harmful, but in the long run, not harmful. And again, that's something that only the situation and you and your practice and your wisdom is going to be able to figure out. Thank you, Kevin. How about Dr. Kevin?
Morning. Morning,
Morning.
everyone. Thanks, Jen. I like the way you frame this. So it's, you know, it's almost like the sutta from Tuesday. Abhaya Sutta, I forget what that was. The you know, at the right time and with the right intention, I say this. And I guess right action is with the right intention and right time, I do this action. So I always go back to, you know, the rules. So, and you probably have these in your notes too. I mean, the basic right actions are refraining from taking life, do not kill others, refrain from stealing, do not take what is not freely given, refrain from lying. And I think it was sometimes there's even thrown in refrain from taking intoxicants so that you wouldn't be a fool and, you know, mess up the Dhamma while your mind is all crazy. But you know, I like it both ways.
I definitely have that list. I do have that notes, and
It
I was
turns,
gonna
you know, from, you
see that
know,
list.
Anapanasati Sutta and the Satipatthana Sutta too as well.
I have a couple of from those different suttas, and And I do think that the word abstain or refrain from killing is helpful because that doesn't, it's not saying don't, it's saying think twice before you do it. Again, giving you that license to use your wisdom to determine what your right action is. Thanks, Dr. Kevin.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Ed.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good to see you. Thank you for reading and elaborating on this, Sutra. Yeah, for me, it's one of those things that it's very easy to understand and sometimes hard to do, especially with the thoughts part of it. I feel like many times my actions or my speech is in line, but I'm trying to get to a place where my thoughts or I don't have to refrain. I find it in the work setting probably the most difficult to practice. Like there's It's funny, I was thinking about it earlier this morning. There's some drama going on at my job, and people come together in community and want to talk about it. And I know it's not the right thing, but at the same time, it's sometimes difficult to just sit there silent and not engage because everyone wants to know where everyone else's position is on a certain topic. And And especially if it's about someone else's wrong actions or words, people want feedback, and so it's I know when I engage in it later, I feel remorse, and
Right.
I
You're
think
still
about it.
thinking about it later on, and
Yeah, so this is just a really good Sutta. Sometimes the simplest ones are the hardest ones. So I love the feedback and the things that the other people shared. So thank you.
Yeah. You bring up a really good point. So right action, right livelihood is right action. It's just right action in the context of whatever you're doing to support yourself. And the Buddha made that distinction because he realized that human beings will make exceptions around their livelihood to right action because they have to support themselves. And so, yeah, it is, it's definitely harder in an employment setting, especially when you have you're surrounded by people who are engaging in wrong speech, and you feel as though you are not in a position to not be around it. And so that's when your practice will help you be in that situation without actually needing it to be different. And as you continue to develop your practice, and you have the wisdom and the skillful mindset to, not engage in the speech or just remain silent or do whatever it is you need to do in that moment to be a part of it without, breaking your own rules and being true to yourself, you will feel better when you walk out of there. And you won't be carrying those conversations with you into the future, which is craving. It's clinging. It's just, and that's what automatically happens when we engage in wrong action. And actually, it's kind of awesome because you're recognizing that. You're seeing, oh wow, when I do this wrong speech, I feel it later on. I'm carrying it into my future. And the next time, and again, it's not about beating yourself up. It's just that you recognize it. I mean, that's all we have to do. The Dhamma, it just says recognize and abandon. So, you see it happening, you let it go. That's all that you need to do. You don't then need to like beat yourself up over it. So, good job.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. There was one. I think there's something else you reminded me of that I had notes on, but I made my point. Okay. I think I'm gonna just do the flippy because this is a pretty amazing thing Rob made. Can't not use it. Let's go to Rom. Okay.
This is the practice in practice. And learn. And yeah, I do use those rules.
Yeah.
No. For me specifically, don't take anything that's not freely given. That's a pretty good one. But you only need to apply it when there's tension, when there's some kind of conflict. It's usually conflict internal, where there's part of you that wants to do this, and there's another part of you that wants to do that. And instead of bouncing yourself back and forth, it at that point it's good to apply that rule. Okay. Am I taking something that wasn't really that was really implied in the transaction? And and the next thing is probably the question, am I being generous here? Is this, what I'm about to do, is this an act of generosity or not? There's another good touchstone for that. But it always it starts with is there conflict? Because otherwise you're already doing the right thing. And yes, it's right livelihood. It's just a high intensity form of right actions because this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where all the conflict is. This is where the pressure is. Yeah, I don't want to be here, but damn it, I have to pay bills. I don't like this. I don't like what the company that I work for is really doing because I don't think that they're really giving people their money for it. And yeah, then you just have to ask the hard questions. Okay, well, how long can I keep this going? Or can I change? First of all, can I change myself? Can I get rid of the conflict in me? Can I do that while still being here and doing what I need to do to make a living? Or do I hand in the letter and say, I'm going to go do something else? And those are hard questions, and everybody gets to ask those questions at some point in their lives, and sometimes a lot. And sometimes it comes with an awful amount of stress, because bills still keep rolling, and the baby needs clothes, and so on. But the practice has a foundation for that,
mm-hmm.
And you can use it. So, right action, right livelihood. This is how we are in the world, without conflict, without internal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There can be tons of stuff going on outside, but if you're in right action, if you're in right view,
mm-hmm.
That just is the wind going through the trees.
Yep.
You're not in the way of the fall of the trees.
Thank you. Let's see. We have Cody. I think you showed up next.
Hi. Thank you for the teaching. I regret that I haven't been here for the past couple of classes. The way that it was explained to me was really that each thing sort of feeds into the next, mm-hmm. so that, you know, if you're in right view, then it's easier to have right intention. If you're in right intention, then you can have right speech. Action follows speech, and all of those things sort of feed one another. And the language of right implies, or it doesn't imply, I mean, there's language of right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend to think of these choices philosophically as binary choices, but, you know, wherever I devote my attention, wherever I spend my energy, there are at least three other areas of my life that suffer because of that.
Right.
And it's just a fact of that's, you know, I only have so much bandwidth. There's only so much attention, and there's only so much focus. So is this the best possible place for me to be spending my attention right now? Can I ever really, you know, like, are you ever really going to have certainty about that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. But I had, like, there are a couple red flags that I do know. If I'm thinking that I don't have a choice about mm-hmm. something, like if I'm like, oh, I don't have a choice, this is the only option,
yeah,
then it's probably just a rationalization that I'm doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to think about it too hard. And then, but I have, it's been my experience in the context of the Dhamma that one thing truly does follow the next. And I don't have to make as many decisions as to where I devote my attention, because if my attention is here now in this moment, then it's already right where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't solve all my long-term planning or decision makings or regrets, but it's a, you know, it's a pretty good signpost. And then in that, with that context, I usually know what the right thing to do is, right?
That's
like funny. I know when I look at a problem that there are probably several solutions to that problem. Or when I look at a person, that there are selfish motives and generous motives. And I understand it in my, you know, in my thinking and in my intuition, what the right thing to do is. It's just making the decision that I'm going to actually do that thing
mm-hmm.
is the tricky part of it. It's not the understanding. And that's like a, just like a split second thing. And I love that Aram talked about generosity. Because like what the Dhamma reminds me of is that I'm not, in peril,
mm.
right? Like when I'm feeling stress or when I'm here, I'm present, I'm breathing air, I'm walking around, I have plenty of food, plenty of shelter, like nothing is going to annihilate me.
Yeah, right, right.
And if I can keep that in perspective, which is what I think that you know, right mindfulness gives me that perspective, mm-hmm. Then it's much easier to understand like how privileged and wealthy I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm much more capable of being generous and giving of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I don't know.
That's all. Thank you.
Now I'm wishing that I had my notes. I've got to flip over again. I got to flip this back to like, I want to, because I just, you just reminded me of something that I read and I have. I might read, abstaining from taking life, remaining harmless to all beings, abstaining from taking what is not freely given, taking only what is offered, abstaining from sexual misconduct, acting with generosity and kindness, abstaining from selfish acts, acting for the good of all. And then right livelihood, remaining harmless when earning a living while contributing to the common good. That's paraphrased. And something that you said, Cody, reminded me that yes, one thing leads into the other thing, but then there's also the feeding back on it, on the original thing. So you have, like, for example, a right action would be something that sets up your life to support your mindfulness, and then that's going to support right view. So, yeah.
Teacher Kevin said, like, a key word, it informs.
Mm-hmm.
Right view and right intention informs your virtuous factors, and then supported by the concentration of mindfulness. So when you use the word right, it's not juxtaposed to wrong. It's within a Dhamma practice that it's a specific thing. It's a very specific thing about what is right. It's within the, driven by right intention. And that's, keep that in mind. It's not a moral balance. That's right. That's wrong. No. In this practice, this is what defines together. It informs.
Mm. Yeah, so then again, I go back to that word abstaining. It's not about, you need to not do this. It's you decide if you need to abstain from that thing based on your practice.
Talk about for less. Are you aware of it? Or you're not aware of doing what you need to do to maintain it or abandon it.
Mm-hmm.
Just mindfulness. That's the structure of being able to make those moment by moment
decisions. Let's see. Can you guys see Mom on there?
Yes.
Thank you, Cody. Sorry.
You're very tiny, but I can see you.
Hi, everybody. Well, thank you, Jen. I think making your way of delivering this without going through all of the steps and bullets really caused everyone to internalize it and make it theirs as they thought about it.
Mm.
And what does it mean for me to have right action? I'm with Ram most of the time. I think it's internal. And it is, like David said, informed. Really informed by right view and right intention. And if you can have those, then you will have the right action. But I find that I personally know when right action has not happened for me, or I have not expressed it or done it, because then I carry it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a learning experience, because then you can you can recognize it easier the next time. So, and it really, this really does fall right in with the Abhidhamma Sutta and the different ways of expressing right speech, and really the different definitions for what right speech is, which I think that and this really go hand in hand. So thank you. That's all I have today.
Julia? Thank you, Jen, for the teaching. I wrote down some little bullet points.
Good.
Because I was trying to do what you were saying, trying to figure it out. Put it like concretely so I could understand it. So I'm going to read some of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the first thing I said was right action is action without self-projection. That's like the main thing, right? It's action without the thought of self-identification. It's also clarity. Clarity is right action.
Mm-hmm.
If you're concerned with what you should do, that's not clarity.
Mm.
That's your mind in conflict, thinking, you know, should I do this? Should I do that? And that's just what Ron was saying.
Mm-hmm.
That internal conflict that you're having will probably, you'll need guidance. And that's why the Buddha gave us the five precepts,
mm-hmm.
so that we have this guidance. So we could actually say, well, I'm in conflict. What would be right action? Breaking any of these five precepts would be very egoic and arrogant. And so it kind of makes sense when you read them,
mm-hmm.
because anything outside of that would be very, very arrogant of us to think that we could, you know, break those type of laws,
mm-hmm.
you know, commandments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all people with wisdom all have these like the same simple commandments,
mm-hmm.
the commandments of life, you know, and that's why they're truth. You can see that they're based on truth, because throughout the world that everyone agrees these are the laws of life, you know. Right action is ethical behavior that promotes peaceful conduct, because the mind dwells in equanimity, not inflamed in self-identification or giving importance to the self. That's it. Simple.
Great. I'm so glad I asked.
Yeah, thank you. So those were my notes.
Michael?
The way I do it, okay? The right action is never about me, okay? It's never about what I want in the present moment. It's selfless in the present moment, no matter what it is. We have a choice in the present moment to be self-referential or non-self-referential. So in that mindset, and that goes throughout the Eightfold Path, the Eightfold Path is a journey about not being self-referential, no matter what arises. Okay, that's the way I see it, the way I believe it. If I'm not self-referential and I'm abandoning the ego in the present moment, what more can I do? Well, this is what that does. It liberates me from self, it liberates me from the ego.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is the path, or that's the path I believe to be, and that's what I abide by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Everything falls into place if you can check your ego, see it arising,
mm-hmm.
abandoning. Doesn't matter else what else happens. It's never about us.
Yeah.
Never about us. That's a simple way of understanding the Eightfold Path. Whatever happens, it's never about us.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. So.
Ultimately, not taking things personally, mm-hmm. and knowing how to do it, learning how to do it. Yeah.
Introspection.
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah.
Hello. Greetings, everybody. Good morning. Thoughts, words, deeds.
closer to thoughts, words, deeds. And, you know, for me, when I am going through my thoughts, words, and deeds, I personally try not to use right or wrong.
Yeah.
I like the skillful, unskillful aspect of the Eightfold Path as a form, the path is there as guideposts, you know, and nothing can be attained without the right view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it starts with awareness.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is skillful or unskillful, but at least for me, I don't see a sequential path.
Mm.
I see an intertwined,
dynamic
path. They all need each other.
Mm.
They all need the same ideas. And really the right view is the guidepost.
Yeah.
The main guidepost.
Yeah.
That awareness for me, it stems from that ego. So when there's a thought for me, and there's that doubt, is this right? Is this skillful? Is it wrong? All those things that the internal conflict that Mom was talking about. And like, is this being done to ingratiate and support the ego?
Yep.
And that's when I personally like to breathe.
Yeah.
And take some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't know if it was Buddha, maybe somebody else said it, that delay in response, right? That, you know, because of the reaction, you know, the reactionary nature of the ego.
Yeah.
That restraint.
Yeah.
Of just, and more often than not, you know, nothing really to think about, just kind of move on. It's not that important. Probably 95% of the time.
Yeah. Do nothing.
this sutta, even though it's just so strange, but not, it's I like the fact that these short suttas typically
work. I know. You just spend all this time.
You know?
Yep. That was my week.
Right. So that's why, you know, that sutta says so much and so little, because of that I could just like see everything kind of just like moving around like gears, and how it all like art, how it all works so well together. But it all stems for me from right view.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so thank you.
Laura?
Yeah, as everyone was speaking and from your teaching, I'm realizing, wow, how connected the hindrances are to, you know, like if I'm in a state of doubt and uncertainty or sloth or torpor, how am I going to decide, you know, or even be in the frame of mind to support, like you were saying, I love how you said that, you know, be in a state to support right mindfulness, which will support, you know, right action, the other elements. So, and then what Kevin often says too, Teacher Kevin, you know, it's almost like each, especially right action, like for me at least, has to begin with some form of, even if it's just for a short period of time, like, okay, informed, noble silence or wise restraint. Or I execute what's going to, like, my next step.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if it's, would you say it's true to say that? Like, that each element almost of the path kind of begins with some form of wise restraint or...
Of course, yeah.
...noble silence before I jump into my first impulse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really helpful today hearing everyone's comments and your teaching, and like Becky was saying, connecting it back to Tuesday night's class. So
So if you're always using wise restraint, then there is no impulse.
Right.
Right.
That's true. Right. Yeah. That word doesn't even
comply
anymore.
That's an action.
Yeah, it's just a right action.
Yeah.
Restraint is an action.
Oh, right.
It's a decision that your Tim's point, because of your mindfulness, because it can't be done without any mindfulness.
Right, right.
You can, like,
the awareness, even. Yeah.
Arms restraint. I know I better shut my mouth. I know I better. I'm not sure. I know there's consequences. Or in my practice, I'm developing refined mindfulness. So I know I need that space. I know this moment is arise, and I know it's passing. What am I going to do at this moment?
Mm-hmm.
I can be in wise restraint. And that's the difference. Is this development of this, these tools of concentration and mindfulness allows you to be in that moment and Gianni on the spot, then I don't have to be lucky about my restraint. It's mine. It's my restraint.
Yeah, like wise restraint actually is, even though from the outside looking at you, it might appear that you're doing nothing, that you're having no action. Your wise restraint is absolutely.
It's the path to renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
Then, at the same time, you look at me still. I no longer have that impulse, and that's the continual, gradual building of your mindfulness.
Yep, and that's what Tim was referring to. Just kind of.
There's nothing lucky about it.
It just
rising and passing away.
Oh, there's the ego.
I love how you pass these things out when you're theatrical side.
Sorry, you guys didn't see that.
You should have seen her face. Yeah, can you do it again?
Oh, I was like imitating ego. I'm sorry.
Your eyeballs got like
Adam.
I'm really grateful for everybody's comments through the morning. It's really helped me understand it. So noble silence for me.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. Hi, Raquel.
Jim, thank you for your teaching. Thank you, everybody, for the comments. So priceless. This week it has been a really a lot of drama in the family, facing that. Other things, the work, and I like what Ron was referring to. You know, you still have to pay your bills, you still have to
do
and the decisions that you make, have to make the work and, you know, the right view, the right speech, that, you know, and it's not always, it's very challenging at the same time. That's how you learn. How to practice the Dhamma and everything else. And one thing that had helped me a lot this week was listening to another Dhamma practice, people that practice the Dhamma, Sam Harris and David Goldstein. And David was mentioning about one thing that he does that's a good advice, like the right view, the right speaker, the right intention. It starts with your mind. Starts with your brain, how you think, you observe your thoughts. Thoughts and feelings are part of the main part of our lives. So when you do observe them and define, is this thought worth having it? Is this skillful or not skillful? And then you, from that, you develop it. You have to have that reflection, that moment of reflection, to stop, not to let your ego go into, you know, the wrong
taking over.
Yeah, and I have engaged in that so many times, like, because this week I was afraid to lose my job, and I did engage in the wrong speech because like Ron said, I still have to pay my bills, I still have to do it. But I pay the consequence of that afterwards. But I think this was a very good teaching. Thank you. And for me to observe that and to put that into practice. What Dave Goldstein was saying also is that, because he followed the same type of practice that we do here, he was saying that one thing that's helpful is to say, when your brain is like going crazy mm-hmm. and not stopping thinking, to ask the question, what is a thought? Not for you to answer, but for you to just ask that question. And I was practicing, he said, that's like the magic thing. And I said, how can that be? And I start doing that, and it's really helpful. What is a thought? And then he also observed that the emptiness of that, mm-hmm. of the thought itself, which is, you don't think it is, you always speak. Thinking that person, it's not about you, like was said here.
Right.
It's not about you. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're here. Hi, Zach. You don't have to talk. But I would love to hear from you.
I like right intention, because right intention is just the intention to abandon wrong views, mm-hmm. right? And right intention to me informs right action.
Yeah.
And right actions are a reflection of right intention, which is to abandon wrong views.
Yeah.
And I just find that so simple, kind of the yo-yo yeah. back and forth between those. Mm-hmm. And if you're in right action, performing right action, then you don't have that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, again, that very smooth transition between the factors on the Eightfold Path. You know if you're not in right action.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. wrong intention, I'm taking it personally. Mm-hmm. This is egoical. This is based on greed. This mm-hmm. is based off of aversion.
It's I'm just craving and clinging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. David?
And there's no tricks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shortcuts.
That's what I was looking for, man.
There's no shortcuts. The whole week. There's what Zach just said.
Yeah.
And Zach can't experience any of that.
Right.
None of it without a meditation practice and developing right mindfulness.
Mm.
So there's no sticker on a wall. There's no little blurb that you're online.
Yeah.
None of it works. It's fleeting.
No cognitive strategy.
No. So, you're not sitting.
Yeah.
This is a nice place to hang out. But you got to do the work. You got to sit. You got to develop
mm-hmm.
gradual. And you start having moments like Zach explained and what you explained and what Dr. Kevin said.
Mm.
That's the meat of the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what, just to build on that, if you can do the exact same action with right mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really, I think it really is only different for you.
Yeah.
It's not people out there. It doesn't seem to me that would be really different for people observing, but it probably is, because if it's different for me,
right,
and my right action is informed by right intention and right view, that for me makes all the difference, even though it can be the exact same action.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is another beautiful thing about the Dhamma.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. That was awesome.
I got notes, but I don't read them.
There was one thing. Let's see. I might go back to my notes. I think one. Maybe. Hmm? Yeah. So when we lose our right mindfulness, when we lose our right view, We lose control over over our actions. When thoughts become conditioned, behavior becomes conditioned. And then I'm just going to read that last Buddha's words paragraph. Train yourselves in this manner. Be mindful to abandon foolishness in thought, word, and deed. Develop and maintain wisdom in thought, word, and deed. Thanks, everybody, for a great class. I'm going to just read the Karaniya Metta Sutta, which I took out so that I would have it at hand, and I can't find it. There it is. This is what is done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. They are able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. They remain unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. They are peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. They do not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. They are always mindful that all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, they are always mindful to not deceive another or despise any being in any state. They abandon anger and ill will with ease, never wishing harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, the wise disciple cherishes all living beings. They radiate kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, they maintain refined mindfulness. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, having completed the path, does not give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Thanks, everybody.